This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Now, before I tell you what's coming up on today's podcast, next week we've got Allegra Stratton coming on the pod to talk about COP26. She's the Prime Minister's COP26 spokeswoman. She's been on before when she talked about her own troubles with having a diesel car and so on. But this time around, she wants to answer your questions. So what questions have you got about climate change? What might happen at COP? What is COP even? What are the issues about coal, cars, cash, planting more trees? Which of the countries are the most reluctant to sign up to climate change targets? What would it mean for you and your own lives? Whatever your questions, whatever you've ever wanted to know about the push to net zero and going green and COP26, Allegra Stratton will answer them for you next week. But you can send your questions in, just email me matt.chorley@times.radio, and we'll put your questions to Allegra next week. That's matt.chorley@times.radio. No question is too silly. No question is too complicated. Just get in touch, matt.chorley@times.radio. Right, coming up on today's episode, it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQs Unpacked, with actual PMQs this week, after all the fun of Cheltenham last week. Patrick McGuire joins me to pause the action between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer. But first, we kick off with our columnist panel. As ever, it's Wednesday, so it must be Crampon. It's Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson. Let's talk about, I was really intrigued by a column by Patrick McGuire in the Times today. He's written The Thunderer about the by-election, which is going to happen in Southend because of the death of Sir David Amess. And all the main parties, Labour, the Greens, Reform UK and the Lib Dems, have all said they won't stand in the Southend West by-election in the same way that they didn't stand against Labour. The Conservatives didn't stand against Labour in Batley and Spen after the murder of Joe Cox. And Patrick mounts the argument that this is the wrong thing to do, and that actually part of politics continuing as normal is the contesting of elections as and when they arise. And I sort of think I agree with him, but I'm open to persuasion. What do you think, Robert?
Oh, he persuaded me, actually. I wouldn't have agreed with him before, and then 400 words later, I did agree with him. I think we all sort of fairly without reflection think, oh yeah, that's the right thing to do. You know, all stand together. Terrorists or murderers shouldn't decide who sits in Parliament. But then I thought, what are they actually afraid of by having an election? They're afraid of it being unpleasant and mudslinging and nasty. So I think that the halfway house should be to have the by-election and for everyone just to have a proper, sober debate and not be unpleasant in the wake of the reason that they're having the by-election. It seemed to me it sort of looks like a position of strength, but I think they're actually doing it out of fear.
That's what do you think,
and therefore, I think Patrick was right.
I think if you look at Kim Ledbetter, she did stand in Batley and Spence, and she is the sister of Joe Cox. She stood afterwards, after they had the uncontested election, and I thought it was much better. She only won, I think, by about 300, you'll remember, I think it was something like 323. It was a tiny majority.
It was very close.
But it
I went up there,
gave
yeah.
her far more respectability and gravitas, really, in a way, I think, that she'd actually won properly. And I thought it was good. It wasn't a great contest, actually. I think it was too nasty and it was vicious and it shouldn't have been. But I think that David Amos would have liked it to have been a proper election. You want politics to carry on. The most important thing is to say to people that actually there is nothing you can do that won't stop our political our sort of political entity and our nature and how we operate from carrying on.
Yeah.
And I think that's what David Amos would have said. So I think that Thunder is actually right. I think we should have a properly contested election, but I hope, as Robert does, that people behave well and not in the same way as they did with Kim Ledbetter when they literally, they just threw everything at her.
I think that's the best way to honour him would be, there's this, obviously this tremendously civilised and civil man, would be to have a civilised and civil election, wouldn't it?
And actually, the point that Patrick makes in The Thunderer is that when, following the death of Joe Cox, it was Tracy Brabin who stood immediately afterwards.
Yep.
All the other main parties stood aside, which basically meant she was running against, as Patrick calls them, opportunists and extremists. You know, she was heckled by the far right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, if you had a contest in which the Conservatives, the Labour Party, the Lib Dems, the Greens, Reform UK, or whatever, it all took part and all behaved civilly towards one another, that would be the fringe nutters who would get drawn to these things become a sideshow. They're not the main event. And I was struck as well, because this is a sort of relatively new phenomenon. The point that Patrick made was that back in 1990, Ian Gow was assassinated by the Provisional IRA. And there was this whole debate happened, and the Lib Dems under Paddy Ashdown came very close to not standing, and then did stand
and won
the day. Yeah. And actually, not long afterwards, Margaret Thatcher was forced out of office. But that's politics. That's how we should do politics in this country.
Yeah, and there's also a democratic issue in that there are people who don't want to vote Conservative in Southend West, and they should have the opportunity to do so, as in not vote Conservative.
Yes, because not voting Conservative now is not to disrespect David Amos.
No, not at all. Oh, I mean, it's better than not to vote either. I think it would be sad if they didn't vote. If you had too many people just abstaining, that would also not be very
democratic. I think that will happen.
I think actually,
because obviously there'll be people who don't want to vote Tory under any circumstances, so they won't vote, will they?
Yeah, if you've got a choice of Tory or fringe, you know, Monster Waverly Loony Party and then, you know, extremist candidates, then that's really not democracy happening. But as we've settled on cozy consensus,
we always do.
We all agree with it. But I'd recommend if you're listening to this and thinking that's not right, I can't agree with that. Go online and read Patrick's column, because it's one of those things which I think there's a lively debate going on in the comments underneath, which he's joined in with as well. Let's move on this is a story which has all been bubbling around for a while. My stepdaughter was sort of aware of this, and this talk of students talking about boycotting nightclubs this week and over the next week or so in protest at what's been described as a spate of drinks being spiked. And even, as the Times reports today, spiking by injections at nightclubs.
Yeah.
A man's been arrested as part of this. One 90-year-old woman said to have felt a pinch on the back of her arm. There's unconfirmed reports on social media of people being spiked on nights out in Dundee, Edinburgh and Stirling. Some women talk about wearing denim jackets when they go out at night because it's harder to be injected. I mean, this is a really shocking story. And it's one of those that I suppose, at this stage, it feels like it's a very early stages, and we don't really know, you know, try to separate, you know, rumour from confirmed reports. But Alice, this is just as students have had the opportunity to go back to social and young people go back to socialising. This is something else for them to really worry about.
Yeah, I'm actually writing a piece for the Times tomorrow on it, because it does seem to be so prevalent. And as you say, we don't know how far it goes, but it's the fact that students now are frightened of going to nightclubs, which is extraordinary, just as they're supposed to be going back to university and having a good time. And my daughter's at university and she's nervous about it now. She's not wearing denim and leather as some of them are to try and protect themselves because they are worried about being inoculated. But she knows quite a few people who've had their drink spiked. And they now get given these things called scrunchies that you put over your drink when you're not drinking, which just seems completely the wrong way around. We shouldn't be saying to women, don't drink too much, cover your drinks, you know, wear thick clothing. We should be saying, right, we're going to stop this. And it's men who shouldn't be doing this. And actually, it is assault if you're doing that, particularly if it's a needle. I mean, you're basically, you are assaulting another person. And it should be taken unbelievably seriously. I feel really deeply sorry for them all because they've had a difficult 2-3 years anyway. This is a new issue that they're having to confront. It's particularly prevalent for women, though there are some boys who've had their drinks spiked. I just think it is dreadful. I think we do have to do something about it.
And Robert, it struck me that, and I must admit, I'm not an expert in spiking of drinks, but I'd assume it's, I mean, to be going out for the night with, what, a packet of needles, that's presumably easier to spot or pick up on before people even enter a nightclub.
You would think so, wouldn't you? Although there is a bouncer shortage,
Which you wrote about yesterday.
Which I wrote about yesterday. Which may, I mean, that may be connected, I don't know. I don't know whether more security would solve the problem. The needle, I mean, I hadn't realised how prevalent the spiking the drinks was until my daughter mentioned, my daughter's 22, and she mentioned it quite casually not too long ago, saying that somebody had offered her a drink, and, you know, obviously I wouldn't accept that because I hadn't seen it being poured. And then I was just talking to some of the younger, my younger colleagues downstairs, and they all routinely guarded against having the drink spiked, and they all knew people who that had happened to. I didn't realise it was such a big thing. And yes, if somebody's going out armed with a packet of needles, I mean assault with a deadly weapon or something. I don't know. I mean, that's really I don't know how widespread that is. I'm not sure what somebody would be hoping to gain by that, even in their own kind of twisted value system. Do you see what I mean?
I wonder whether you sort of talk about whether this is a sort of broader indication of how maybe through social media in particular, and, you know, not everyone sitting down and watching the 10 o'clock news every night.
Yeah.
We are living in these silos that you've got. It's been reported by The Tab, which is a sort of big student website, where there's loads of Instagram groups and pages and so on. All this stuff is being shared. You know, on the one hand, you've got boycotts of nightclubs taking place in Leeds, Swansea, Edinburgh, Stirling, Aberdeen, Newcastle, Bristol, Brighton, Nottingham, Bournemouth, Belfast, Southampton, Durham, etc. All this is going on. And it's already reached a point where, you know, collectively, our children are saying, oh, yeah, no, I've known about this. And yet, this has clearly been going on for ages. It doesn't bubble up because it's just happening. Unfortunately, they're discussing it on Instagram, well away from, you know, news organisations as such.
I think what's really difficult is that they think it's so normal now.
Yeah,
so
quite.
I thought it was extraordinary that all of us have obviously now had in the last few days conversations with our children who've had, instead of going, oh, I'll look into that, have gone, yeah, of course. It's not like they're saying, oh, God, that sounds awful, or, oh, I'll worry about it. What I find difficult is you instinctively say to your children, particularly your daughters, don't drink, only go out in groups, be careful, you know, dress up, don't be provocative. And that is exactly the wrong message. It's basically saying to them, we are going to curb all your freedoms because there's somebody out there who may want to destroy you. That's, you know, it is, I may destroy you. It is a terrible, terrible indictment.
I think there is
of our society if we do that.
I think there is a pernicious strain of misogyny around at the moment. And I think there's always been around, but it's exacerbated by social media. And it's become acceptable in a way that it hasn't been for a couple of generations for young men to be fairly brutally sexist about young women. And the extremist tip of that is this kind of behaviour. I do think there is a wider problem.
Yeah, and much like
something which I thought had actually been getting better for a couple of generations is now, it turns out, isn't. You know?
Yeah. I suppose it's one of those things where when you think that progress has been made on lots of fronts, and then everyone relaxes a bit, and then along comes, you know, essentially social media, and it's normalising a load of, whether that's misogynistic, racist, sexist, homophobic stuff become anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic, yeah.
And then it becomes, and they think they can say it on Act Upon it. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? Like, I think that with, you know, when I look at my daughter and then I look at my experience at university, and I definitely didn't go to a nightclub fearing that my drink was going to be spiked. Or even though you knew occasional stories, you knew it wasn't prevalent. And I definitely didn't worry about getting home. I mean, she has constantly got her friends tracking her, which is extraordinary that they, you know, you think you'd be safer because you have a phone, but actually they feel less safe. And then they're using their phones really as devices to make sure that they're, if someone takes them, that they, you know, there may be someone who can help out, but it probably is too late. I mean, they don't even trust the police, I don't think.
Well, no, well, yeah, for some reason.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, yeah, entirely understandably, I suppose.
And I suppose the other thing about the internet is it actually getting hold of date rape, Rohypnol or whatever, becomes a lot easier, doesn't it? You can just order it up. So it's not just being able to terrorise people through tweets and trolling. It's actually getting hold of what you need to do that.
I suppose that normalisation of attitudes towards women, starts off online, but then becomes, you know, your attitude in life and your attitude you're out in nightclubs.
It can do in extreme
in extreme cases.
Yeah.
Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson there. Of course, you can read them in The Times every week. Just get yourself a digital subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire.
Yes, here we are again then. It's midday on a Wednesday. We await Prime Minister's questions, joined by Patrick Maguire, Red Box editor. Hi, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Matt. Lindsay Hoyle sting sounds better every time I hear it.
Yeah, regular listeners will note we finally got Lindsay Hoyle to say your name out loud. So we look ahead to PM, because the first one for, about a month, Patrick, what with the conference recess and then Boris Johnson on holiday last week. What would you, if you were advising, if Keir Starmer picked up the phone to you in the last hour and said, what shall I ask about then? Patrick, what do you think Keir Starmer should be going on?
Well, if only you did, our copy about Labour might not be so relentlessly negative. I think that Keir Starmer, there's a very obvious subject to go on, and that is the Plan B, not the defamation of Strickland Banks, great album though that is, but the stuff you heard Matthew Taylor talking about from the NHS Confederation this morning. Kwasi Kwarteng sort of very airily dismissed it on the morning round, but that question of cases are going up, hospitalisations and deaths, while they're, you know, hospitalisations are quite high, deaths are still, you know, lower than they were last week, but still there is a sense of rising alarm within government. Will Keir Starmer, you know, plough that furrow today? I suspect he might.
It was interesting, though, because when there was, I think they were talking about this on Times Daily Breakfast this morning with, I can't remember who the Labour front bencher was now.
Bridget Phillipson.
Bridget Phillipson. Yeah. There's no alternative plan. Labour isn't at, well, maybe this might change. Maybe Keir Starmer will actually do this. But Labour so far has always been reluctant to say masks should be compulsory again. Let's have work from home. Let's have rule of six again. I mean, it's notable that actually in the last year, the only one that really sticks in my mind is that Keir Starmer called for a fire break lockdown.
Circuit breaker. That's a phrase exactly we don't hear so much anymore. Yeah, God. Those heady days. It looked like a very decisive intervention at the time, although in hindsight, to use Boris Johnson's favourite word in connection with Keir Starmer, you know, less clear now.
Yeah, well, we ended up having one when it was a bit late, and then we had to have another one anyway. And Wales had one. It didn't make a huge difference.
And yes, exactly. And this will be the key theme, Labour. You know, I was speaking to you know, a senior Labour person yesterday, and they were talking about how to sort of hammer home the point Keir Starmer made in his conference speech, i.e. that Boris Johnson, he's not a bad man, he's a trivial man who dithers, vacillates. You know, they say it's a shame Dominic Cummings is such an unreliable and toxic messenger because the trolley metaphor is the perfect one. What Labour want to emphasise is that Keir Starmer is a serious man for serious times, and that there are lots of decisions that he would take differently or would have taken differently, so that we wouldn't be in whatever mess we happen to be in at any given moment. And I imagine Keir Starmer will ask very pointedly, you know, when might we see increasing mitigations? And perhaps he'll ask the question Danny Finkelstein poses in his very good column this morning about, you know, what is an acceptable rate of cases, hospitalisation, deaths before the government considers new restrictions. And another interesting question, just briefly, is how the tone of these exchanges, given the emphasis on civility, we've heard from politicians in the aftermath of, you know, the tragic news on Friday of David Amos's killing. So lots to consider.
Well, there we are. Thank you very much for that perfect primer, Patrick McGuire, Times Red Box Editor. Well, we can now go live to the House of Commons with question number one. It's Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I pay tribute to Ernie Ross, a formidable campaigner who served this place and his constituents with great distinction for three decades? Mr. Speaker, I will pay my respects and tribute to James Brokenshire immediately after this Prime Minister's questions. Can I thank the whole House for the way the tributes to Sir David were handled on Monday? We saw the best of this House, and I want to see if we can use that collaborative spirit to make progress on one of the issues that was raised on Monday, tackling violent extremism. It's 3 years since the government promised an online safety bill, but it's not yet before the House. Meanwhile, the damage caused by harmful content online is worse than ever. Dangerous algorithms on Facebook and Instagram, and Hope Not Hate, have shown me an example of violent Islamism and far-right propaganda on TikTok. What I was shown has been reported to the moderators, but it stayed online because apparently it didn't contravene the guidelines. I have to say, I find that hard to believe. So will the Prime Minister build on the desire shown by this House on Monday to get things done, and commit to bring forward the second reading of the online safety bill by the end of this calendar year? If he does, we'll support it.
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Right Honourable Gentleman for the spirit in which he has approached this issue, and I echo what he says about the need for cooperation across the House, because the safety of of MPs, indeed of all public servants. Everybody who engages with the public is of vital importance, and the online safety bill is of huge importance to is one of the most important tools in our armoury. And what we're doing is ensuring that we crack down on companies that promote illegal and dangerous content, and we'll be toughening up those provisions. But, Mr. Speaker, what we are also going to do is ensure that the online safety bill does complete its stages before this House, before Christmas. And I'm delighted, or rather, that we do bring forward bring it forward before Christmas in the way that he suggests. And I'm delighted, Mr. Speaker, that he is offering his support, and we look forward to that.
Okay, let's just pause that there. This is what we do on Times Radio. We pause the action trying to unpick what is going on. We should point out Keir Starmer there paying tribute to Ernie Ross, who was the Labour MP for Dundee West from 1979 until 2005. He died on Sunday, so that's who he's paying tribute to. Although there were tributes on Monday to Sir David Amiss after PMQs today, there were going to be a separate tribute session for James Brokenshire, who died of cancer during the recess and obviously served as a cabinet minister for some time. So that's what Keir Starmer was referring to there. Patrick McGuire, on the substance of what Keir Starmer's getting at, it's sort of interesting how, as far as we are aware, social media played no part in the killing of Sir David Amiss, and yet this has become the sort of the big political talking point of the repercussions of the killing of Sir David Amiss.
Yes, but the way Keir Starmer has, you're completely right to say, for instance, Mark Francois, close friend and former election agent of David Amiss, fellow Essex MP, was, as many MPs have, as Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, has, on Monday, was talking about the idea of a David's law guaranteeing anonymity, banning rather anonymity on social media, talking about dragging Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey of Twitter and Facebook and Twitter, respectively, to the bar of the House, kicking and screaming. But as you say, that sort of emphasis was on the abuse of MPs, the broader question of civility and the coarsening of the discourse. What Labour are talking about, and there was a hint, a very subtle hint for obvious reasons in Keir Starmer's speech in the David Amiss debate on Monday. And this is a big theme the Labour Shadow Home Office team have been plugging away at for a while, is... Yeah, he's not talking about social media anonymity because people are trolling public officials and public figures, right? He's talking about the very specific issue, and you've heard this from security experts in the wake of the killing, about online radicalisation and the lack of a robust enough regulatory regime to force publishers, treat Twitter, Facebook, other social media platforms as publishers and force them to take that stuff down. Now, you know, that is a separate issue from the broader questions about online abuse we've been hearing. But interestingly, and you know, Keir Starmer won't push too hard at this because he doesn't want to look like an opportunist. You know, he's literally wearing a black tie, so there's a limit to how aggressive he can be in pinning this on the government. But interestingly, I remember last summer, you know, far be it from me to invite readers inside the sausage factory that is the Times Leader page, but writing a Times Leader about you know, the online harms bill. And at that point, you know, it had been a year, you know, we were still waiting for meat on the bones. We're still waiting for the online harms bill to be brought forward, to be published in full. So Labour can mount an argument saying, look, people have been radicalised online during lockdown. You know, there are manifold we're all agreed on the failures of social media companies to act with due responsibility in regard to hateful or illegal content. Why isn't the government doing something about it?
Well, let's go back and see if Keir Starmer sticks to this topic for all six questions. Go back to the House of Commons now for question two.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Prime Minister. I think from that, and this isn't a challenge, it's to clarify, that the pre-legislative scrutiny will be finished before in early December, and that the second reading could, I think, be before the end of this calendar year. But we do need to get on with this. Telegram has been described as the app of choice for extremists. And, Mr. Speaker, if you can believe it, if the House can believe it, as we were paying tribute to Sir David on Monday, Telegram users could access videos of murders and violent threats against politicians, the LGBT community, women and Jews, as we were paying our respects. Some of these posts are illegal, all of them are harmful, and Hope Not Hate and the Board of Deputies have said that Telegram has, in their words, facilitated and nurtured a subculture that cheerleads for terrorists. Tough sanctions are clearly needed. Yet, under the government's current proposals, directors of platforms failing to crack down on extremism would still not face criminal sanctions. Why is that?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, it is this government that brought forward an online harms bill, Mr Speaker, and he's heard what I've said about the second reading before Christmas, and in the collegiate spirit in which he announced his he began his questioning, I can tell him that we will continue to look at ways in which we can toughen up those provisions and to come down hard on those who irresponsibly allow dangerous and extremist content to permeate the internet. But, Mr. Speaker, I'm delighted that he's taking this new tough line, and I very much hope that he will get the rest of his party in the lobbies with us to join him.
All right, let's just pause it there, Patrick McGuire. First of all, explain for listeners who aren't aware what Telegram is.
Telegram is, it's a very good question. It's like, WhatsApp for, super nerds, organised criminals and jihadis and investigative journalists, right? It's sort of a very heavily encrypted messaging platform where you can sort of subscribe to channels, for instance. So if sort of there is a nefarious plot going on, for instance, when the one that springs to mind actually is when people were organizing how to break into Wembley for the Euro 2020 final in June, there was a group called the Wembley Jib that people could join, for instance, and it's all heavily encrypted, crucially also anonymous, and so that's the sort of platform where regulation has not only feared to tread, but hasn't really touched. And it's a tricky terrain for Boris Johnson, not just because of the political considerations I mentioned in my last question, i.e., we've been waiting a long time for meat on the bones and action on this legislation. But Boris Johnson is many things, but I think his close knowledge of popular culture and technology probably stops around the Sinclair C5. So it's not natural terrain. And it's interesting, the sting in the tail of Boris Johnson's answer, despite this being a broadly consensual PMQs in tone thus far, was it's the classic question to Keir Starmer, which is, OK, you've got lots of criticisms about the speed with which we're bringing forward this legislation and the small print, but do you support us on the principle? So it'll be very interesting to hear what Keir Starmer says in response to that.
OK, let's go back then. This is question number 3 from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, I did start in a collegiate spirit, and I'll continue in a collegiate spirit because I listened hard to what was being said on the opposite benches on Monday about the concerns about this issue. And we do need to recognise the measures in the bill, but we do need tough and effective sanctions, and that means criminal sanctions. And that does matter, Mr Speaker. It is frankly beyond belief that, as the Mirror reported yesterday, 40 hours of hateful content from Anjum Chowdhury could be easily accessed online. The Prime Minister and the government could stop this by making it clear that directors of companies are criminally liable for failing to tackle this type of material on their sites. We don't need to delay, so in the collaborative spirit we saw in this House on Monday, will the Prime Minister commit to taking this away, looking at it again, and working with all of us to strengthen his proposed legislation?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I've already said that we're willing to look at anything to strengthen the legislation. I've said that we're willing to bring it forward, and we will bring it forward to second reading before Christmas. And yes, of course, Mr Speaker, we will have criminal sanctions with tough sentences for those who are responsible for allowing this foul content to permeate the internet, Mr Speaker. But what we hope for also is that no matter how tough the proposals we produce, that the opposition will support it.
So there we are. So he seems to be zeroing in, Patrick, on this idea of directors of tech firms being criminally responsible for what lands. And now, it sounds like that makes sense. If you've got a platform, what you should be responsible for what people put on it. You know, newspapers are responsible for what people write in their columns. You know, maybe the same should be true of Facebook. But that's an enormous shift, isn't it, in legislation and approach. And actually, it probably would fundamentally change the way we currently use technology.
Yes, exactly. And this is at the very heart of this debate, right? Are these platforms mere platforms as their executives, as Nick Clegg would probably give us a very impassioned and convincing or not answer on that, or are they publishers and should they be treated as publishers? There is an understandable reluctance on the part of government to go the whole hog, not least because it's very difficult. This is an entirely new landscape. But I was very interested to hear Boris Johnson there, you know, set himself a deadline before Christmas to bring this legislation forward. Knowing, you know, this government's approach to timekeeping, rod for his own back, I think.
Yes, I think he could well be right, because these things do have a habit of slipping. Let's see where Keir Starmer takes this next. This is question number four.
Mr Speaker, we're making progress. We've got the second reading committed to before Christmas. That is a good thing. And I think the Prime Minister is now committed to criminal sanctions. At the moment, they're a fallback position at the discretion of the Minister. They should be, in my view, on the face of the bill as the automatic default for the failure to act. Now, if we're making progress on that, then we're beginning to address some of the issues that were identified across the House on Monday. Can I turn to the report, the Commission for Countering Extremism, which was set up in the wake of the horrific Manchester bombings. 8 months ago, that commission made recommendations to plug gaps in existing legislation and strategy, gaps that extremists have been able to exploit and are continuing to exploit. Yet Sir Mark Rowley, formerly head of our counter-terrorism policing, who led on those recommendations, said just this week, "I've had no feedback from the Home Office on their plans in relation to our report on the absence of a coherent legal framework to tackle hateful extremism." Given the seriousness of the matter and the clear need for action, why has the government not responded to this important work? And will the Prime Minister now commit to act swiftly on the Commission's recommendations?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, the government and my right honourable friend, the Home Secretary, works with all parties to tackle violent extremism, and the UK has one of the strongest counter-terrorism and counter-extremism systems in the world, as a consequence of which we have foiled 31 terrorist plots since 2017. And I pay tribute to the work of Sir Mark Rowley, with whom I worked extremely closely while I was in London, and all those who are involved in foiling those terrorist plots. And I can tell you, Mr Speaker, that they will receive the complete support of this House and of this government, nor will we allow them to be released, or those who are convicted, to be released early from prison, Mr Speaker, because that was one of the most important things this government passed and which that party opposed.
Yeah. I should point out Priti Patel is sitting on the government front bench, sort of chuntering along. You could hear her slightly in the background there. Doesn't look very happy, I think, at the challenge to the Home Office's record on this matter. You're listening to Matt Chorley on Times Radio, bringing you PMQs Unpacked. Here with you on Times Radio in association with Strive UK from Mastercard. You can find out more about that at mastercard.co.uk/Strive. Patrick Maguire, this criticism, highlighting what Keir Starmer is doing, is he's sort of mounting a case by actually drawing in allies, if you like, whether it's Hope Not Hate Before, now Sir Mark Rowley, formerly the head of Britain's anti-terrorism policing, now he's conducted this review for the Commission for Counter-Extremism. Is this a bandwidth problem that the Home Office haven't tackled it? We're still coming through the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of focus on immigration, visas, migrants crossing the channel and so on. Why is it, do you think, that the government has allowed itself to get into a position where it does seem to have let this one sort of slip onto the back burner a bit?
I think, you know, that word bandwidth is a good one, right? We've had a hell of a lot of domestic legislation that has been deferred, put on ice for the reasons you talk about. The Home Office even after the reorganisation in the late noughties, which saw the Ministry of Justice spun off, still has a huge, unwieldy range of domestic responsibilities, right? So that's not, that I don't think is necessarily surprising as much as it is now, it's now coming back to bite the government. And just briefly, the point you make about the coalition of voices Keir Starmer is assembling there goes to show Labour's keenness to cast themselves as, you know, in that sort of very Blairite, tough on crime and the causes of crime sense, right? You know, hope not hate to the Metropolitan Police, not groups that often have much common cause or, you know, nice things that, you know, hope not hate, it's fair to say, would not have many nice things to say about the Metropolitan Police some of the time. But, you know, it's Keir Starmer, the, you know, the candidate of security in the sort of conventional sense of the word, but also, you know, he's tough on the prejudice and the causes of the, you know, domestic security issue.
OK, let's go back to the House of Commons. Keir Starmer again.
Keir Starmer.
Really? After the week we've just had, I really don't want to descend to that kind of knockabout. Mr. Speaker, either we take this seriously, and I'm taking my lead from those on the opposite benches on Monday and what they were saying about the need to tackle this. Either we take it seriously and go forward together, or we do a disservice to those that we pay tributes to. There are clearly problems with the government's counter-extremism strategy. Internet users are increasingly likely to come across extremist content online. The government's own independent reviewer has said that there is no evidence that the government's key de-radicalisation programme is effective. That's the government's independent reviewer saying that. And we've seen a spate of lone attack killings with the perpetrator invariably radicalised online. We all want to stop this across this House, but at the moment things are getting worse, not better. So what urgent plans does the Prime Minister have to fix these glaring problems?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm all in favour of a collegiate and cooperative approach, and then in which case I think it would be a fine thing if the opposition would withdraw their opposition to our measures to stop the early release of serious extremist and violent offenders. That's all I'm trying to say. In a collegiate approach, and I'm sure that is what the people of this country will wish to see. But we will continue to do everything that we can to strengthen our counter-terrorism operation and to support all those who are involved in keeping us safe. And obviously it is too early to draw any particular conclusions from the appalling killing of our colleague, but we will draw all relevant conclusions from that investigation.
It's interesting, Keir Starmer. I mean, I suppose as an observer of politics, I would say that the way to properly pay tribute to Sir David Amess is to do politics properly, and if politicians have disagreements, they should be able to have those. Patrick McGuire, I'm not sure we're getting terribly far on this.
No, we're not. And I, you know, in that sort of, as Boris Johnson would say, minestrone of themes raised by both leaders there, I think, as you say, the most significant thing was Keir Starmer's response to Boris Johnson, more in sorrow than in anger, trying to cast Boris Johnson, who frequently makes this argument about Keir Starmer as, a partisan point scorer in this of all weeks. And it goes to show, much like security is that theme Labour are trying to draw out, there's the other thing, you know, serious versus trivial. As Senior Labour source said to me yesterday, Keir is a serious man for serious times. That's the point he's trying to make there.
No, well, let's see how it all winds up. This is question six, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The inescapable desire of this House on Monday to finally clamp down on the extremism, the hate and the abuse that festers online is incredibly welcome. Yeah. But closing down anonymous accounts would not have prevented the murder of Joe Cox, nor of PC Keith Palmer. And although we don't know the full circumstances surrounding his death, nor would it have saved Sir David. If we're to get serious about stopping violent attacks, we need to stop online spaces being safe spaces for terrorists. Yeah, exactly. We need to ensure that unaccountable, arrogant social media companies take responsibility for their platforms. Yeah. We need to end the delays, get on with the legislation and clean out the cesspit once and for all. Mr. Speaker, I've prosecuted terrorists and I've prosecuted extremists. I've worked with Sir Mark and others. Dozens of Labour MPs have worked hard on tackling social media companies on these issues. I started collegiately and I'll continue collegiately. We know what it takes. We can help. So will the Prime Minister now capture the spirit that we've seen this week and agree to work with us on a cross-party basis so that we can tackle violent extremism and its enablers together?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm delighted to join the Right Honourable Gentleman in committing to tackling online harms together, to tackling violent extremism together, and that is what the government is doing, and that's why we brought forward the Online Harms Bill. That's why we're investing record sums in tackling counter-terrorism. But, Mr. Speaker, I must say that what I think the whole country and the whole House would certainly want to see, in addition, if I can say this to the Right Honourable Gentleman in a collegiate spirit, in addition, is a commitment by the Labour Party in future to support measures and not to allow the early release of those terrorists and those who are convicted of those offences from prison. And if you could hear that from the Labour Party, I think it would be a fine thing.
Crispin Blunt.
Brings us to the end of the front bench exchange. That's Boris Johnson, of course, referring to some separate legislation which the Labour Party has opposed. There's an interesting thing going on here, isn't there, Patrick? Because Keir Starmer's playing quite a clever game, it has to be said.
Yeah.
Saying he's rising above politics and reflecting on the cross-party sadness over Sir David Amess, while also brandishing his own tough on terrorism. I've prosecuted terrorists, I've prosecuted extremists, going after unaccountable, arrogant social media companies. The cesspit must be cleared out and all that. He's doing pretty hard, actually, probably quite effective politics in all this.
Yeah, I have to say, I agree. It was very deftly and tastefully done, considering the constraints of taste, you know, given the events of this week and the expectations, you know, that he himself reinforced when he called out Boris Johnson for, you know, knockabout stuff. And I think, you know, it's a reminder that one of Keir Starmer's strengths is, you know, that sort of lawyerly ability to weave quite a compelling case. And you saw over the course of those six questions, Labour sketch out a coherent argument on where the government had gone wrong. You know, it had been slow, it had been unwilling to take on vested interests, and, you know, the institutions, the public trust, were all on Labour's side. And by the way, Labour, unlike what Boris Johnson may say about terrorists, is the party that is tough on crime and its causes, yeah. just as it was under Tony Blair. So quite impressive from Keir Starmer. I think we agree on that.
I'm going to make a small prediction, though, that when the legislation comes forward, the online hate bill, Labour won't think it goes far enough, and Boris Johnson will end up quoting back what came up at PMQs today.
Yes.
That's my prediction. He'll say, you said you were going to support it, and Keir Starmer will say, well, we didn't know the details then, and that'll be an argument in time for Christmas. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know that thing you've always been too scared to go for? It seems like you'll never have the guts. Then a cancer diagnosis and doing that thing becomes way less scary. I would know. I've always wanted a black belt. And today, the only thing standing in my way is a few wooden boards. It's been a lot of hard work and 5 years since I beat cancer at Ohio Health. Bring it on. You keep making plans.
Visit ohiohealth.com/keepmakingplans to learn more.